Hi everyone, welcome to another episode of my podcast. We have very special guest today joining all the way from Singapore. We got Luke Bursky joining the podcast. Hi Luke.
Hey brother, how you doing? It's good to see you.
I'm good. I think your hair is longer than I remember.
It is. I've been living in a cave for 18 months, pretty much. Not being on stage, I get time to groom it. And still it's a night, like that looks like a dreadlock. And it's just ridiculous. I've got like 26 different hairstyles in one.
Right. So how are you doing? How's Singapore? How's life?
Singapore is cool, man. I miss Australia. I miss friends. I miss going overseas. But honestly, I learned a lot about myself last year. I think a lot of people did too. It's weird that with change, how different things can be. And for me, I made a lot of changes last year. I ended up losing like 20 kg or something like that in about 6 months. And then I put a bit back on and I put a bit back off. I was at the hokey pokey, 1 foot in, 1 foot out. But then I had a career change, like not career change big time. I was still doing music, obviously, but I did something I never thought I would do. And about the middle of the year, an opportunity arose itself and a friend of mine had offered me to work at a kids camp. And I've done like rock and roll programs for kids and like School of Rock sort of stuff and mentoring bands and everything like that. And yeah, this was no guitar, no microphone, just yourself. And it was all just being funny and silly. And I've been doing that now for about a year and I love it. And it's seasonal, so it's not all year round. But on top of that, I've been teaching guitar lessons online and also in person. Getting into tennis, just picking up new hobbies, and just enjoying life, really, which is weird because you'd think, you know, the first couple of months of the corona, what I call the corona apocalypse, I was not enjoying life. I was like, oh my God, what am I gonna do now? I'm screwed. What do I do? But yeah, all that's kind of gone now. I'm honestly the happiest I ever thought I'd be at 32. I was very fearful of turning 30, like in my late, early mid-20s, I was freaking out. And now I'm 32, I'm like, yeah, not bad, good job.
Yeah, so if I remember correctly, you're actually from Tasmania, right?
I am, yeah, man, you've done your research. Teague always makes fun of me, that he's like, man, it's not even a real country. He's like, it's still part of Australia.
Yeah, because when you say Tasmania, you know the first thing that comes into mind, Tasmanian devil.
Yeah, that's pretty much how I introduce myself. Every time someone doesn't know where it's from, I just mess with them. They're like, "Does everyone?" I love it when people get very literal. I love Singapore, but some people get very literal. I mean, everywhere, and they go like, "Oh," when they haven't heard about a place they haven't been to, they go, "Oh, Tasmania, is that like?" What you just said, the Tasmanian devil, like, is everybody like that? I'm like, yeah, of course. Yeah. And so we greet each other. We go, how you doing? And they're like, oh, really? I'm like, no, of course not. I mean, yeah, sure, maybe.
Right. So Luke, I think the first time I saw you or even spoke to you was, I think, in 2017. I think it was in Hard Rock Cafe, Singapore, when during the Tyler Bryant show. I think that's the first time we met.
That's right, man. Yeah, I remember that. Yeah. Yeah, that was at the Hara Cafe in Orchard Road in Singapore. I love that show, man. That band was killer. And Teague opened for them, right? With his other
Teague
band.
Yeah, I think Teague and Alif opened for them. It was Tyler Bryant's birthday also on the same day, right? We had
I completely forgot about that. Yeah. Wow. You remember everything.
Yeah, that was like that, because that week, like, there were a lot of shows, and then I remember seeing you on the backstage of Guns N' Roses.
That was the dude, that story, I won't go too much into it because, as Teague knows, I go on forever when I tell a story, although there is a lot in this story. The reason that happened when you saw me at Guns N' Roses and I was on the stage, it was like everyone's like, what the hell? There was I'd gone out the night before. I went to Cella V, a big club in Singapore at the time. It was on the top of Marina Bay Sands. Anyway, I went to say hi to a friend's table. Next thing we know, a fight breaks out. And there was these guys in the next table. This big guy gets up like this. And I was like, what the heck's going on? What's that? And there was a guy who was a bodyguard for someone. And someone at our table, well, I go and say hi to, had been throwing ice cubes at people all night. And he hit this guy in the eye. Anyway, I said, hey, guys, I hope you're okay. I just want to let you know I am not, you know, involved with them. Like, as in, I had nothing to do with that. I'm really sorry. I hope you're okay. And I went to walk away and the manager came over and said, hey, thanks so much for helping. I'm like, I didn't do anything. And the guy's like, hey, man, we're not from Singapore. Thank you so much. Anyway, I recognized some people. It was Tyler and the band. So Tyler Bryan and his band were sitting on the side next to these other guys. I introduced myself. And one of the guys was like, I said, oh, so what do you do? And I'll never forget. It was so weird. It was so random. And they said, oh, can we get you a drink? So then I said, what do you do? And he goes, I build cars for Slash. And I was like, sorry, what? And then asked the next guy. And the next guy said, I said, what do you do? And they all laughed. And I was like, what's so funny? He goes, I manage Guns N' Roses and Slash. And I'm like, no effing way. And I'm like, how has this night happened? I mean, I almost got thrown off the top of one of the biggest buildings in Singapore. I can't prove me wrong on that. And so the next day they invited me and said, come by, come hang out. And Slash's bodyguard picked us up. For me, it's like my little boy dream. I was like, oh my God. And we got to go in this like London cab. They took us there. We saw like the sea of people, these poor people walking like 6 hours. That location was insane. Like 6 hours walking towards the thing. And anyway, I got there and I thought I was just going along to see the show. And the guy, I think I've still got it here somewhere. Ah, here it is. I just found this the other night. So yeah. Fernando was the manager and he gave me this. And this is for the family riser. So the VIP thing, I kept it all this time. And he gave me that and said, this takes you into the family riser. So all the family members of Slash, whoever was there, Slash and Axel, if they have any family and friends over the years, they would go to this area. It was like drinks and food. And they took us to, it was the most insane experience. And I saw that, you know, I took a lot, as you would, I took a lot of pictures, but as you don't, I suck at posting. So I never put anything up and it was all just a dream, but it was really cool experience. I got to hang out with Wolf Mother, who's, you know, from my land as well. It's so weird, from my land. And yeah, it was awesome. And then I got to hang out with Tyler Bryan all night. I asked him a lot of questions, like how they got this gig. And it turned out how Tyler got the gig was through Axel. When Axel was fronting AC/DC, Axel had called them up and said, hey, remember when you did that show with us with AC/DC? You guys were amazing. We're going back on tour with Guns N' Roses. Do you want to come? And so I was really excited because I got to find out all the information and like everything I always question myself on when I'm scared to ask a favor or call on some big guy in the music business. I'm scared. You know, you're intimidated by it. These guys answered everything for me. I was like, wow, it's as simple as that. Like, if you want something, you got to go, you got to grab it and ask, just ask. What's the worst going to happen? No. Yeah. So that's how I met Tyler and all those guys. They were awesome.
Yeah. Actually, I think 2 years ago, 1 year ago, Tyler actually got married to the Larkin Poe, right?
The sisters. There's two of them. I follow them too. Oh, I'm embarrassed now. I don't know their names. They actually played the last F1. So the last Grand Prix, because I was performing at the Grand Prix as well. And we'll talk about that later, I presume. But the celebrity after parties I used to play for during the F1 races. And their band played. I was like, oh, I know this group. Oh, yeah, well. And one of them was Tyler's wife. And I was like, oh, if I'd have known, I would have reached out and said, hey, let me take you out. Let's go have some fun, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, because I was actually there at the show Larkin Poe. So
that's right. Yes, yes. What's the name of the band again?
Larkin Poe.
Larkin Poe. That's it. Yeah. So I couldn't go because we had to be at soundcheck at like 12 o'clock. They had the Spice Girl playing, and they had like all these other big acts playing, like Savage Garden guys and all that sort of stuff. And we had to be and by then with the Ritz-Carlton, you can't leave. It's like Hotel California. The minute you're at the place, I said, oh, I want to go watch the Muse and I want to go watch so-and-so. And they said, dude, you won't get back in here in time for the show. I'm like, the show's 1 a.m. He goes, you're not going to get back in here for 3 days. You're not going to that show. So, man, I love Larkin Poe. They're amazing.
Yeah. So Luke, tell me a little bit about your childhood and what's your first memory of music? Or the earliest memory of music.
I probably have the most embarrassing stories of music as a kid. Whenever I ask kid, or I teach a new kid, whether it's 5 or 8 years old or 9 years old, they're like first really getting into something. they always have really exciting stories. And you hear all your rock star friends, like they, like, you know, these rock star people we all love. They all, we always ask them, like, what was your first childhood dream? And they're like, oh, you know, I went to watch AC/DC when I was 6 years old. I'm like, wow, that's so cool. Guess what my first concert was? Ricky Martin. Yeah, that happened. Also, I didn't like rock and I hated blues. I thought it was the most ridiculous thing. I thought it was boring. It was batshit boring. I just didn't like it. And I used to be, I used to love Ace of Base and the Baha Men, like, who let the dog? They had a CD that had like six songs, but they didn't actually have six songs. It was six remixes of Who Let the Dogs Out. It was, and I used to be obsessed with it. Like, I would listen to it all the time. Like, wow, I'm going to learn this. Yeah, blah, blah. So for me, my early childhood memory for music, outside of music, there's other things, but in music, for me, it would have been, I think when I first really got exposed to music, I'm like, wow, that's, that could be an option, was there was this guy that used to play every Sunday. It was called Salamanca Saturdays, and Salamanca was like an area, kind of like Haji Lane in Singapore, or I'm sure in the Philippines, you guys have music, cool areas everywhere. Anyway, right. And people go for brunch or lunch or whatever their families. And this guy would just sit every single Sunday for as far as I can remember. And when I used to live there, every Sunday without fail, he eventually had a kid, that kid got older, and he'd release albums, and he'd do some covers, but it'd be a lot of original material. And one day I just approached him, I think when I was like 12 or 13, but my mum told me I would sit there for hours and hours. Even on his break, I'd ask him a million questions, like about music. And he never was mean. He was never rude. He just answered my questions. And that was really cool. So for me, that's probably the first. And he was just a street musician, right? He wasn't anyone famous, I presume. He was known in that area. But yeah, so for me, that was one of the earlier childhood memories. But yeah, Ricky Martin, two songs in. My mom was like,
oh my God, yes, I love this.
And her friend had got the free tickets and says, oh, look, you're going to have your first concert tonight. And she calls it a rock concert. So to me, I'm thinking, it's going to be like Kiss. I'm like, oh, yes, let's do it. And it wasn't Kiss. I was pissed. So, yeah.
So what sort of music was playing at your home when you were a child?
Oof. Dad loved Savage Garden. And Mum loved... When I say loved, they're still alive. So Dad loves Savage Garden. And at the time, Mum didn't really know music. Mum would just, she'd go, oh, I love this song. She'd have no idea what the song is and have no idea who the artist is. So she's the worst. She'd make the worst musician. But she used to love like Mustang, like let's just say songs, Mustang Sally. She liked Madonna. She liked Footloose, that sort of upbeat, bebop, disco-y, funky, uplifting stuff. So I didn't really get exposed to that because I wasn't a fan. I didn't really care for it when I was younger. I don't think I even really took rock. I took rock well after about 14, but everything else like funk and blues, those roots of mine honestly didn't kick in till very much later. Like I'd say I like blues and rock and funk probably my late teens or early 20s. So for me, the house, my grandmother, I always forget this, although me and her didn't get on well, my grandma, my mum's mum, she was actually like the number one organ player in Australia and used to be hired by the ABC and all these big news channels. Sadly, she liked my other brothers way more than me and just chose to we never got on. I would love to have learned from her, but I was probably an arrogant little shit anyway, so I probably deserved it. Yeah, so she used to play the piano all the time. She was very holy. So she like really like she's Catholic, and we were all Catholic because of that. And it was very strict, which I didn't like. So it's funny, a lot of people don't know that. Like I didn't come from a Catholic upbringing, but my family, especially mum's side, they were heavy Catholics, especially mum's mum and mum. Like we'd go for Christmas and Easter, but her mother and father were like they were hardcore Catholics. And if I had to stay with them on a Sunday, I'd get a smack if I didn't go. So the music I heard was that. But really, when I was growing up, honestly, there's nothing cool about what I listened to in the house. Savage Garden, everything like that. And anything that if we go to McDonald's would have a CD. I make it sound like it's 50 years ago. It's not. McDonald's would have a CD with, I used to love the So Fresh albums. And then have like 20 of the top songs of the year or something like that. Or McDonald's would release a CD with five songs. And I think I really got into the rock and roll thing because I was obsessed with wrestling, massive fan of wrestling. And when I first heard Stone Cold Steve Austin's soundtrack and Triple H and The Rock, I was like, whoa, these are cool. Wow, what's that? And Kane and The Undertaker, I was like, and all these rock and roll kind of influences, that's where I got into, because I like the visual effect as well as the theatric, and that's where Kiss came in. So it's funny, it went from literally that to whoosh, and then Slash and everything like that. And Guns N' Roses, I was obsessed with when I was about 14. And that's when it really branched off. It's like that whole, I wish I would have had it like when I was like 6 or 7. I can only imagine being a child that young and loving that kind of music. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Even for me, wrestling, WWE, WCW, those wrestling was big influence.
Huge.
Actually, I knew that you're a wrestling fan. Guess what shirt I'm wearing?
Straight Edge. Is this an older wrestler or newer? Because I haven't followed it for the last like.
Yeah, this is kind of a. It's not very new, but a legendary wrestler. I think you can.
I want to say Undertaker only because. I wasn't from CM Punk. I know who he is. I wasn't from that world. I was from, and not to say I'm older than that. I used to watch the old. Reruns and stuff. But yes, I like him. He's really cool. And Roman Reigns. I don't know much about these guys. But that, you know, it's funny when you asked about my childhood thing. Outside music, my dream as a child, when I was like probably 10 years old, my dream was to be a wrestler. Like I wanted to be a wrestler. And I came up with the most dumbass, idiotic name ever. I was going to be known as Tree Trunk Man. I don't know where that, I don't know why. Why couldn't I say the killer or the ice face killer or something cool? No, Tree Trunk Man.
Right.
That could have been it. Thank God music came along and I took the tree. Instead of turning to wrestle, I took that tree and made a guitar. Well, I didn't make it, but I bought it and used it for better.
Right.
Way better things.
So how old were you when you pick up the guitar?
I picked it up when I was way younger. Like I played violin and all that sort of stuff, but I picked up the guitar when I was probably, when I came to Singapore. I always think about this the other day. I was talking to my mum and I thought, I wonder if I would still be playing music if I'd never moved to Singapore. Cause I didn't in Australia. I didn't. I played drums and I hated it because the teacher was so boring. And I played violin. The teacher would cane you with a stick if you played the wrong note. So I was like, God, what is with this music thing? People are so mean. And when I came to Singapore, I did guitar when I was about 12 or 13. Anyway, the class was classical and I really didn't enjoy it. The only reason I kept doing it was because my younger brother, he was better than me. And I hated that. I was so jealous. I hated that. The fact that my little brother, who I'm supposed to be, I'm the bigger brother, I should be better than him. So right. I continued, even though I sucked. I mean, I sucked for years. And he just was like, he would come in easy. His brain got it. My brain would like just go through my eyebrow, go through my eyeball, go, oh, detour, let's go down the nostril and never come to the heart. It would just take forever and my fingers just wouldn't connect. And so anyway, I was lucky to have some pretty cool teachers that showed me the way and friends that got in. So honestly, I'd say seriously, I picked it back up when I went to the Australian school because the international schools in Singapore was so diverse. There's so many different people you meet, so many different influences. And I probably picked it up there. And that's when a lot of friends were listening. Sum 41, Metallica. It was so, like, went from that to Rancid. I didn't really listen that much. And then a bit of, like, reggae, whatever. And we would challenge each other every lunchtime. And I got a few friends that they only picked it up to pick up chicks. And because I was the fat kid, I wanted to do that too. The only problem was they would get chicks. I just get more picks and keep playing. We would challenge it. Like, hey, tomorrow I'm going to prepare Damn It by Blink-182. Okay, well, tomorrow I'm going to do this song. And then you'd have to challenge almost like a duel, but it was a friendly thing. It was really cool. And that honestly, that was really nice because it was a bonding thing. And it was nice. Yeah.
Right. So
I hope that answers your question. Sorry. My brain goes everywhere. I apologize if I don't get to the point. T gets really annoyed with me. And I can't, I have AD, I call it ADHD in high definition, like ADD in high definition. My mind, you'll ask me a question and I'll give you a mind map of 20 more answers, which, right. So I apologize if I'm rambling. It happens a lot. Yeah, I guess so, that's good for a podcast because people just want to hear talking. So, right. Hello, podcast people. Welcome to hell.
So which guitarist do you think that really inspired you or influenced you on your playing?
I hate this question because I never have a solid answer. I'll say one, and then after this meeting, I'll be really disappointed in myself and then won't and be like, ah, that's not... I meant this guy. So I'll say who right now, maybe, I guess. Back then, it wasn't about the guitar playing. It was the theatrics. Like, I loved Slash because Slash looked so cool. Steve-O, I didn't know about all these cool guys till way later. And Kiss, I loved Kiss. But it had nothing to do with the guitar player. It was the performer. I actually liked... I really liked bands more than I liked an individual musician because it was a team effort thing. So guitarist, I think like Rage Against the Machines, of course, I love them. And I love Tom Morello and his style. But that's not the style because of Tom Morello and like that, or Slash. Of course, I like those styles. It's funny. I have that really cool, you know, I have that Jimi Hendrix tattoo that everyone always wants to see, which is, of course, why would they look at this awesome? And the guitar and all that sort of stuff. But it's funny, I honestly, this is going to be embarrassing to say, I honestly only know about 3 Jimi Hendrix riffs and not the full song because I just can't be bothered to learn it. I'm like, too much work. I'll do my own version of it. It'll be good enough. They'll like it. If as long as I sing some words, it'll be fine and do the minor pentatonic scale. We're good. I should really learn it one day though. So Hendrix I really liked because again, it was used in a wrestling song. It was Hulk Hogan's anthem for Voodoo Child. I was like, I need to learn that riff because it's cool. I love Zakk Wylde. Like I liked shock rock. I think maybe that's the way to put it, where it's like, it's rock, but it's theatrics. So anything that put on a good show. And that's why I find it really hard to go to shows when the band is killer, but they're so boring visually. It's not their fault. It's my fault. It's because I expect too much maybe. So for me, a lot of that stuff was like Kiss, Motley Crue, man, they were cool to watch. Guns N' Roses, I was obsessed with, like, especially Slash. I would have hats. I still have an unhealthy obsession with hats. Like, I have this. I look ridiculous. Every time I wear this, I don't wear it in public because everyone was like, oh, you look like the singer from Lynyrd Skynyrd. I'm like, he's really fat. That's not a compliment. Like, I'm not taking that. And then they'll say, oh, Dimebag Darrell, but fatter. I'm like, again, with the fat comment, there it is, but I'll take it. So darn tootin' to you. But yeah, but someone who really inspired me, especially in the funk world, that's when I really enjoyed music. So I loved, before funk, it was like Jack Johnson, Pete Murray, that's an Australian kind of Australian artist. I love that soulful, funky acoustic stuff. John Butler Trio. A huge one for me was Nile Rodgers. That's where I had that turnover feeling. Because Nile Rodgers, I didn't realize how much he'd done and how many songs he wrote. And then he came for the Music Matters Festival here a few years ago. I'm wearing this backwards, apparently. Oh, there you go. That's better. And he did this massive talk. It was really interesting to hear all his thoughts about, you know, Chic. And, like, he wrote the song I'm coming out, bum, bum, I want the world. I didn't know all these things at the time. I was like, wow. You can be like really famous and playing music and guitar and enjoy it without being really famous. That's him. I'm like, what? And then I heard it. And then I went and watched these movie shows about like artists that were featured on so many massive. And that's why I got really into it, is more the history. I love reading biographies. Like, I can't read Harry Potter to save my life. Not because I don't like the story. It's just, I can't relate to a kid with a lightning strike in his face and glasses. I love the drama from Slash. Like, I read that book like 6 times, and the Heroin Diaries by Nikki Sixx and stuff. So I love stuff like that. And that's why I got deeper and deeper. And then I learned about Pearl Jam. I learned about this band, that band. So it all just grew from there.
Yeah. I have the same kind of, because it's very hard for me to read fiction. I love really talking, like, reading about real life, and because that's more interesting than...
Well, you're going to find inspiration through that. Like, sometimes, I don't even finish a book, like the Richard Branson thing. There was a bit in Richard Branson's book. I was supposed to read the whole thing and I just got lazy. I love the bit about the Virgin Records and how that big song came out, and then There was like one little tiny, and honestly, it happened earlier on in the book, and the as well as Prince and Sting's book, I didn't get past 20 pages. Not because I didn't want to. My mind, I will read the same line 30 times, and it will literally go in one eye and out the other. I don't process it unless it really hits home. And I think everyone would appreciate that to some extent. I'm sure maybe in the future, I'll probably read that book again and love it. But right now, my mind is like the city that never sleeps. It's really frustrating. But good for music and songwriting. I've always got something to say. But yeah, so the fiction thing, I like it, but in movies. And it's to each their own. Some people love the books, and I respect that 100%. And some people love the movies, you know? So yeah, so, but I should say who inspired me, because you did ask that question. And I think for anyone listening, whether they're a fan of mine or Dirty Perfect or anything, or just in general, I would have wanted a question answered by someone I looked up to as well. So for me, Slash, Tom Morello, Jimi Hendrix, Zach Wilde, Nile Rodgers. So those would have probably been my top. And there's probably a lot I'm leaving out. Richie Kotzen, huge. I love him. And Nuno Bettencourt. That almost forgot about that. And recently, very Steve Vai. I never really listened to it. A lot of people, Angus Young, a lot of people, I don't like when I use this word because it's not fair, compare me to some of their riffs that they do. And I'm like, I actually had never heard these bands before, but these artists back then when I wrote some of these songs. And oh God, that reminds me of this. And I'm like, huh? And then I was like, oh man, I'm being accused of copyright or something. I better be careful. So it's really cool and humbling to hear all those things too. It's cool. Sorry, I just rambled on again. You asked a simple question. I gave you too many answers. Sorry, continue.
So Luke, how old were you when you moved to Singapore?
Well, it's coming up to my 20th year anniversary. So I moved here. I'm now 32. February 5th, I was born, 1989. For those people who don't know math. I moved here when I was 12. About 12. I'd lived in Tasmania all my life till I was about like 10. And then we went to Melbourne for a year and a half. And that was really rough for me. I didn't fit in there at all. And then we went to Singapore because Dad was always flying. He was always traveling. So we moved to Singapore and Mum just said, hey, look, you're always traveling and your kids like me, my brothers, we don't even see Dad on the weekends. And even then he'd be exhausted. And that's what I learned about life is like, I understand now I want my own free time. I've got a week off next week from kids camp and I can't wait to enjoy it because I'm always working. I'm always doing something. So it made me learn a lot of things. And I moved to Singapore when I was about 12 and then we stayed here. And, you know, I had lots of opportunity to leave and go elsewhere. And people were like, oh, why are you staying in Singapore? You're too talented for that. And it was lovely to hear. But I think I've always been big on friendships, big on family, big on the place that made me who I am. I mean, Singapore, I have to thank for everything for that. Not just Singapore as the word or the country, but the people. I met so many cool people here, including you. If I hadn't moved to Singapore, I wouldn't have met you, right? Or Teague or anyone. So when people go, like, oh, Singapore, why are you staying? I'm like, to be honest, it's the perfect playground and practice ground. You go overseas, and if people are drunk enough, they're going, yeah, we love the music. No matter how drunk someone is in Singapore, if they don't like your music or if they like it, they're still, that's the reaction you would get. I did not just glitch. For those listening and not watching, I just froze my face and looked like that scene in SpongeBob when one of the fishes does that weird face, pretty much Squidward. And that's not to say everyone's like that, but in Singapore, it is a rough audience. And if you're not cut out for that, you're screwed on stage. And so I learned the hard way, which was, I call it the hard way, because in Singapore, I actually now weirdly enjoy an audience that even if we rock the house down, and it's happened with Dirty Perfect before, our first show as officially Dirty Perfect, that's exactly what happened. And it was really awkward. I was headbanging, my hair was flying everywhere. It was crazy. Teague's running around the stage, spinning with his lights on and everything. When we went like this and we opened our eyes, the whole audience just frozen. They just stared at me like they wanted to kill me. And I'm like, and I thought, you know what? I'm just going to imagine. Some people say, imagine the audience with their clothes off. I imagine that they're all vegetables and they like hit their head before the show and they're now vegetables and they're in a vegetative state. but inside they're dancing and they're like, ha, 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 I'm having a great time. Ha, ha, I'm smiling. But they're not. They can't move any muscles in their face. That's how I see the audience now. And I love it because then I'm just being sarcastic and I'm very sarcastic and very silly and funny and stupid. So for me, that's a double whammy. So when you go overseas, if you ever had a bad show, it's easy, right? So, and that's not the reason I stayed here. I just love Singapore and I love everything about it.
Right. So Luke, you started with more of classical guitar, right? You fingerstyle and sort of that.
I wish I could call that as like, I wish I could say like, yeah, I was classical. I was more in the moment as I was present for lessons. That doesn't mean I was present mentally. I was always thinking about, well, when am I going to learn how to like headbang? When am I going to learn how to do like, you know, when am I doing that? And the teacher was like, oh, no, you're not ready for that. That's annoying. I had a teacher for a long time when I was younger who would always tell, I was obsessed with Switchfoot and Yellow Card and all sorts of stuff. And there were certain songs, but I really want to learn a Thunderstruck riff. I had to learn it all by myself in the end because I had a teacher who would go out for smoke breaks all the time. And he would, he was a good teacher. I think maybe I made him fed up. I don't know. He was a good teacher, but not for me personally. I would come in, we'd have 30 minutes of the lesson. He'd bugger off to the toilet and have a cigarette probably. And I'd be sitting there like so excited. I'm like, oh my God, guitar lesson. Yay. Ooh, here we go. And he'd come back. He'd learn the song in the lesson. And then I get like 5 minutes. And I needed that 30 minutes to learn the damn thing, like absorb it, right? So for me, it was really, really rough. And he would do that for 3 years. And I wanted to learn blues. When I first heard the blues, I was like, whoa, what is that? Like bad to the bone. I wanted to learn that riff because of the movie Problem Child. I'm like, every time I see a Problem Child, I'm just going to play that song, which is me pretty much walking to the room, or my brother. And I would play that. I would even let him go, you know what he said to me? He said, mate, he goes, Luke, you're just not ready for the blues. And I was like, oh. Okay. And I thought, I will never say that to a student. If I, in the future, like now, I will take on any challenge. If the kid wants to learn Snoop Dogg next episode, bam, 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 or some weird like Maya, he, Maya, ha, I will teach that crap or a rap song. I've got lots of kids that are obsessed with rap. I'm like, I will never make someone feel like you can't do something because that's what I was made to feel for years. And so I went to college for music. I struggled really badly because I thought it was all like the School of Rock movie. I thought, oh, we're going to go on stage, we're going to rock and roll. Yeah, go party all day. It wasn't. It was more theory and more school. And I dropped out of goddamn high school to go and be a rock star. Like, what is this again? I got to write essays and stuff. What the hell? And that's exactly what it was. And then I did another 4 years. It felt like jail after high school for dropping out. It was like, that's payback for dropping out of school. So, yeah, it was weird. I don't know if I answered the question. I apologize again for all your ears. For whoever thought this was a sleeping channel, it's not. I apologize. This will not pull you to sleep. If anything, right. This will give you PTSD.
So, Luke, what was your first sort of public performance?
So I used to do a lot of drama. That's why I do quite a bit of acting stuff and the comedy, silly stuff and voiceover work. That's what I do now later in life and stuff. So my first performance was always theater stuff. Like I was obsessed with that. But in terms of me, I just can't see my forehead and it's driving me crazy. I'm taking this off. Go away. Here we go. Okay. Now I've got a receding hairline. No. I think my first real musical performance I remember that I can recall with a guitar. Everything else was choirs. Like I don't consider that a performance to me. My first real performance, and I was so proud. Oh, my Lord, I was proud. My first real performance was a teacher that I had. He was doing the show. And he was like, oh, Luke, we're going to do Wonderwall. I was so excited. I was like, Wonderwall, oh, my God, I can't wait to perform. Oh, my God, the girls are going to love me. And I learned it. And he said I was going to take the lead. I get there on the show night. I'm like, I'm just decked out with the coolest clothes. I was like 13 or something, 12, 14. I was so excited. And he got me there and he goes, okay, Luke, the other guitarists, they're going to be here. I get there, there's 20 other guitarists. I'm like, okay, what the hell is going on here? And it turned out they'd all been told the same damn story. It was a scam. And they were all sitting there with their silly acoustics. They're not even plugged in. They were like shitty I don't know, $15 acoustic nylon strings are probably, and he asked me to tune them all. So he made me feel special. And I chewed them all. I felt tuned. I tuned them all, felt special. Went to go on stage, and I literally went, I was like walking up the stage like this, and he goes, "Oh no, mate, you're down there." And I'm like, What's that? We've been training what for 4 months for me to sit with the other 20 sardines in the can. What? And I ended up sitting, I had to play it like a I want to say the word retail, that's not true. I played like an idiot. I was like, "Today I'm gonna," and all these guys are out of tune. "Today is gonna be the day." He was up there, lead guitar. He was soloing and going. I looked ridiculous, in other words. And yeah, so that performance was not good. And then after that, I did another performance, and I was 14, and we had this thing called like Australian School Idol, or like we had like international schools had their own idol school thing. And I ended up, I was obsessed with Nickelback at the time. Like everyone hated them. I loved them. The more people hated it, the more I loved them, because I would listen to their songs. I'd get the shit kicked out of me in school by a bully. And that Nickelback would, just the words they had when they, or like, it was like Pantera almost. Someone's going to bash me for saying that. But they had very heavy, cool riffs and cool. I liked their lines. So I had that. And I tried to do Someday, like Someday, Summer. And I sounded like a pirate. And I remember just being bullied to the ground. So I had a lot of downers shows. All my shows to me, I felt so cool. And I looked like an idiot, because I would wear a jeans jacket, jeans, and a silly hat in the style of jeans. Like I looked like I looked like one big pantsuit of jeans with a face and a couple of bum fluffs hanging off my chin. I looked like an idiot. And I put sunglasses on. I was always in make-believe land, even around friends. And I think I still am until 32. So, the first performance sucked. And I think when I was like, I had my 16th birthday, my mum let me put a band together in our driveway, and I invited my friends over. And this was my first ever real band name. Wait for it. And we were called Dark Spider Fumes. Not Flames, Fumes. Why? I don't know. The dumbest name ever, and our hit song was Burning Spider. It wasn't a hit, it was terrible, but it was fun. And that was probably the most fun I'd had for my first few real shows, because your friends, when they come to a show, even if you suck, they're like, "Yeah, you're amazing." So I needed that. That was nice. So yeah, that's probably one of my first real proper performances. And then I just kind of somehow progressed from that. I don't know how, but I did.
I still suck. So from there, how did you like go into writing your own songs? Like how did that happen?
Okay, the songwriting stuff. So again, this might go into a tangent. Get ready. I'll go all over the place. I'll try to come back as fast as I can. But the songwriting thing always happened. I think I should think about this before I say it. When I first started like getting to even learning music, I would get very lazy very fast. And I'm probably going to get bashed for this too. As much as I love music for my idols, I preferred listening and learning rather than actual learning and playing their music. I liked taking, receiving, going, "Okay, I like that." And then thinking, I want to write a song, a rock song in the style of Guns N' Roses without learning their music, not copying anything. I would just like, "Oh, that's pretty, that makes me feel this way. I'm going to go off and do this." And that's how I started doing it. So I was obsessed with Jack Johnson and all these kind of like lovey-dovey artists like Richard Marx, which is weird for me. But I really liked that stuff. And Jason Mraz and all these guys, I was obsessed with that stuff. And I would just go off and write and I would just try it. And I remember, I think my first ever real song that I wrote, apart from Burning Spider, was a song called, I think it was called The Best Day of My Life, I think it was called. It was called Gateway to Success. And the reason it was called that is because I had this t-shirt that I thought was so cool. It looked like a child's t-shirt, to be honest. And I mean like a 1.5-year-old's t-shirt. But because it said in the worst possible English, something about like music being the best, music is best, but I read it as music is the best. And then it said Gateway to Success. And I was just like, that's a cool three, that's just cool words. Gateway, that's what I want, the Gateway to Success. And I went and wrote a song about it. and I performed it, and then I wrote another one for my mom, and it started going on from there, and then I did the rock stuff. So I would just write music all the time. I was writing before I knew how to write. I would just write down ideas. I had this songbook. I've still got it somewhere. And I would write down the tabs, and I'd learn how to tab, and I'd write down my own little licks and stuff. And if it sounded like something else, like another song, I would penalize myself, and I'd have to write two songs that sounded nothing like that song. So then I'd have all these songs. And so now whenever Dirty Perfect, like the guys want to do, like Teague once says, hey, we should release some new music maybe later in the year or something, I will go off and check my files, which usually is on my phone or like an old songbook. I'll go through old poems and stuff that I wrote like 15, 16, 20 years ago that I don't remember that I did. And I'll just read it and see how it makes it. It feels like the butterfly effect. Remember that movie? The butterfly effect. And he would go back and read like his suicide, like not suicide, but he'd read some stuff and it would take him out of a bad situation and put him in a better than now or whatever and change the narrative. So that's how I kind of saw it as well. And then till now, I don't really have an answer for it. I play with so many different artists all the time. I'm confused. I'm all over the place in a good way though. And I'm happy about that because it keeps me on my feet. It keeps me going. Sometimes I'll write a really hardcore classical like piece. I'm not classically trained, although we talked about that earlier. I'm not classically trained, but I listened to that music and I was inspired by it just like anyone else would be in my own way. And I took what I liked and I went off and made apple pie with it. I don't know. And then the same thing with the rock stuff. I would go off and I would do my own thing. I'd learn like a Lenny Kravitz riff. I love Lenny Kravitz. That's another guitar hero for me. And I go learn one of his cool riffs and then go, okay, this is the kind of style I want to write. I like this. And the rap rock thing with Dirty Perfect, that wasn't meant to be that way. I always wanted to be a singer like Miles Kennedy. Like, I want to be able to sing like Chris Cornell, but I can't. Like, I physically probably could if I trained it and I had a good, like, someone to train me that way. Because there is a way. They must, especially like, you know, Linkin Park and all those guys, Chester Bennington. I don't know how they do that stuff. Like, I've tried it and I always end up hurting myself. And so over the years, I'd trained singing. I had a singing teacher, but I didn't take it seriously. And then now I'm like, okay, I can do this. But that's my style, the rap rock thing. I never thought I'd be doing that, like that kind of Limp Bizkit style. But it just happened that way. And then now, later in life, because I've actually done some proper training, like I've actually bothered to sit down, okay, la 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 la, all that stuff, I finally was like, oh, I said, that does actually help. When I was a kid, I hated the idea of technique. I hated it, threw it out the window. I said, no, nah, I'm not going to say the word on here. And I just focused on creativity and playing with effects and guitars and different, trying to make different sounds with all the amplifiers. And then when I found a really cool sound, like I love right now, and I think, you know, like Tyler Bryant, I love the, and Tom Morello, I love the mix between just, I always wanted to play bass because everyone would say it was a boring instrument. Teague would hate me for that. But I didn't, it was a boring instrument. It was like, it wasn't cool, like to everyone else. So guitar, but I wanted to make it sound like a bass guitar. So that's how, when I write music, I don't write like full on chords a lot of the time. It's always like, I call it riff rock. That's the only thing I can call it because it's literally riffs. And I've taken like 20, like 10 riffs or something. And I'll just put them all in one song. Oh, they're on the same key. That'll do. We'll piece it together later, like crochet. Yeah.
So you've been with Teague in many projects. I've seen, like, if I look at all your projects, previous bands, stuff that you had. So where is Teague coming? Like, when are you getting together with Teague? How did you find Teague?
Well, when he makes very good friends with the prime minister and the government of Malaysia, and I make best friends with the government in Singapore, and they say, oh yeah, you and Teague can just go see each other every day. That's when we'll do it. Because currently that doesn't seem to be a thing. He's stuck in Malaysia. I'm stuck here. I wouldn't say stuck. We both love where we are. It sucks we can't be together. We've talked about things here and there, but he's busy with Yay Plus, and that's awesome. I've joined it here and there. It's weird. I used to be on social media a lot. And now everyone's like, are you dead? I'm like, yeah, something like that. So I would love to see Teague. And I know he would feel the same. And they did the Yippie Ki Yay Festival recently with Yay Plus, which looked really sweet. I tuned in for it. It looked really cool. And there's a couple of music festivals that are happening in Australia, a couple that are happening here on the live stream level stuff. And I've been asked for the Dirty Perfect thing probably probably 5 or 6 times in the past few months, actually more than that. And I had to put, I was asked to do a couple of shows recently. Well, I was very lucky to get chosen for this. A friend of mine, Lincoln Lim, got me involved. And I had to put together a trio because I couldn't get Dirty Perfect. I didn't want to do Dirty Perfect song because it's not fair to the band. But if I wrote them, I would introduce it as a cover from Dirty Perfect with me performing with another band. So then it wasn't disrespectful, you know? So I literally put a trio together in 1 week and we performed for the substation before it closed down. They had like 60 days before they had to, the SMU, the university was building around it or something. So we had a couple of sold out shows there. And that's the only action of Dirty Perfect I've had, because I always love to show off Dirty Perfect songs because they're really fun. And we've been really lucky to have some radio play with some of the songs that we never got to release. So you've heard Tell Me, but there's another 2 tracks that are on the radio currently for, I think it's, I'm probably going to say this wrong, but it's the Yay Plus radio station. And I think it's KWS something. I could be wrong. I don't want to get wrong, but it's the Yay Plus radio. And there's another radio station in Australia that is like a college station that plays it as well. And some other stuff in the States. So there's another song called Waiting Game. And actually that would have been a really cool song to release during this Corona apocalypse, because it is the epiphany of that. It's a waiting game. We don't know what's going to happen next and when it's going to come next. So I wrote that song years ago. And We Are is another one. And we had another one on the way called Nowhere to Hide. And we played that at the Crazy Elephant. I think you would have heard it as well, Nowhere to Hide. Maybe. I don't know if it was written then, but we played it at Clark Key once there. So we actually have like four or five originals that at least two or three haven't been recorded. And then we were talking a couple of weeks ago about doing, hopefully, I mean, it's inspiration has to strike, right? Like I can't just write, and I won't write just because. I used to try and impress people. I won't write just because people say, oh, you know, you don't have enough songs, you need to release more. I'm like, some people only release one song. Like, I'm not saying that's what I want to do, but I am not going to force it till I hate music. That's what happened last time. I was forcing myself, and I was getting very stressed towards the end of 2019. I was hating music. Not hating music per se, but hating the business and how, oh, you, if you don't do this, you're going to fall through and no one's going to listen to your band anymore. I hated that. But that mentally destroyed me, and mental health issues and stuff, because I would listen to people all the time. So for me, I would love to get another couple of songs together and even just keep putting out songs once a month. But life doesn't work like that. Some people can do that. You know, Ed Sheeran pumps out those tunes and Taylor Swift and all those guys. But sometimes bands release songs every 10 years, and that's not the plan, but it might, you know, I would love to at least have one or two new songs with Dirty Perfect by the end of this year. But I don't want to say that because it's not, you just don't know, right? And like I said, I'd love to be with Teague. I know he'd love to be with me, and we'd love to do some shows or something special. We try to do the Zoom thing, but because it's always, I think, you know, you probably experienced this. There's always that few milliseconds off. And when music, you can't do it. No matter what, people ask me to get my guitar and jam on here. I'm like, but when it gets to you, that milliseconds, I could be going like, you know, We Are, and you'll see, you'll hear We Are, and my mouth goes, I'm not right. It's embarrassing, I think, to any artist that is incredible and visually, you're excited to see something, and then it, because of technology, it doesn't work out that way. So we tried a few of these avenues. We saw some cool products, but nothing's come through yet that's gone like, you can be there and I can be here. I can be in this room. If it's pre-recorded, we could do it, but probably live, I don't think so. You need that togetherness. It's so important. So I do miss that a lot. I really miss being in a band. And, you know, the Luke Bursey Trio thing is more like a mixture of all the music I've done with heaps of different bands, and all the songs that I've written. That's what I do. That's what Luke Bursey Trio is. But I really miss Dirty Perfect as well. Like, I would love to get back into that. But again, there is no telling. There's no point promising. I don't want to say, yeah, guys, hey, tune in. Like, yeah, I'd love you to follow us, but I'm not going to say, oh, do this, do that, and then not be able to deliver. I like to know it's a done deal, or it's like almost done deal sort of thing. Like, I don't like to keep fake promises that you just don't know. So to that question, I really can't answer that. But I hope whatever I've said comes close.
Right. Luke, there's, when I Google your name came up on IMDb.
What?
Yes, for the music video, the professionals funk it up, right?
Are you okay? This is the first time. I mean, I used to Google my name. Everyone does. Anyone who's in entertainment or acting or whatever has Googled their name. Even if they go, like, oh, no, I don't do that. I'm like, yeah, you do. But you do. I used to do it all the time. And I would never find anything good. I was always actually trying to find the ugly pictures just in case. I'm like, okay, I've changed the name on that one. So it never comes up again.
Right.
Or if like maybe someone took a picture of me and looked like crap. And then I gave up. So it's a first, wow, IMDb, that's pretty cool. I'm just not going to tell people. I'm going to go and edit the information and make me sound cooler. Funk It Up was about, that was with the professional, with John Class, who's now, he was like a big radio presenter. He's now on Kiss 92 FM or something like that. So he's a radio jockey, disc jockey, and he used to have a big band apparently in the 80s. I wasn't there, so I wouldn't know, but in the 80s or 90s, and it's a band called Kick. Anyway, he was coming back and wanting to put together a group, I guess, to live his glory days again, I presume. And he put together, I actually got the musicians, most of them. There's one or two that he had, but I got Teague, I got Ritz Ung, who's incredible. Ritz is just a fantastic Singapore-based drummer, and he's Singaporean, incredible player. So Funk It Up, that was a cool song. So I didn't write that, I arranged that, but I just didn't get credit for it. And, you know, that's an argument that goes back and forwards. I don't really care anymore. But back then I did. John would call me in. We'd work on the music. It was cool. So he was a talented songwriter. He wrote some really, he knew, that's where I got, I guess, into the more upbeat stuff. I didn't really like that sort of music. Very electro, happy, bebop, happy music. But it worked and people liked it. And he got some killer opportunity. He knew the right people. We got to go to France and Cannes. I'd never been there. And the last time I went to France when I was a kid, people were not that nice. In Cannes, it's like France upside down. They were so nice. It was awesome. Not to say France in general is bad, but I would love my previous experience in Paris, like 20 years ago, people weren't nice to me. But in Cannes, it was beautiful. And it was great to meet really cool musicians and all sorts of stuff. It was a good opportunity. We got to play for one of the, Singapore, I mean, every country does this, but the New Year's Eve, we got to perform, I think celebrate 2013 on the floating platform. So it was a cool opportunity. There's some really cool opportunities. And yeah, it was fun. It was good.
Yeah, I really loved the, you know, you were dressed up. It looked like a Tarantino movie, right? Scene from a Tarantino
movie. Yes, yeah, you were like Kill Bill. And everyone always thinks I look like Michael Bublé in it because I had the short hair. No one recognized me. Now when people have met me in the last few years with the long hair, when they see me with a short hair look, they're like, what the hell? Like I met Katy Perry a few years ago, well, probably like 6 years ago or something, and I took her out to Clark Key and we partied and everything. It was the weirdest. But again, I had short hair and I was like 20, 30 kg heavier than I am now. So I've gone through all these really weird phases where I look not unrecognizable, but you go like, that was you? I think I saw you like 15 years. I'm like, oh, cool. And I had blonde hair like Eminem at one point. It was weird. I went through some weird changes. The Funk It Up thing was cool because you had to wear suits. It was always nice. You know, he was John Class. He was very into that whole thing. Like he wanted us to wear suit. We would wear the same suit for 4 or 5 days in a row for shows without washing it because we didn't have time. And he was like, no, we must wear the suits. So I respected that because it was like James Brown sort of thing. You know, James Brown would make all the guys wear cool suits and all those kind of bands that do that. So it was a cool experience. I haven't spoken to John since. And the band has kind of fizzled off. I think he went to do his own thing for a little while. And it was just, I guess, creative differences. I kind of wanted to write more and I want to be a part of it more. And he liked it being his own thing. And I 100% respect that. I wish him well. And I think it's cool, really cool what he's doing now. And I want to go and do my own thing as well. So that's what we did.
Right. I think probably exactly like 2 years ago, I think it was like August or July or August. I think I actually saw Dirty Perfect perform. I think that was at that brewery place. What's Crossroads?
Oh, the Crossroads. Yeah, it was previously known as the Pump Room. So a lot of people got that really confused because I don't think they'd officially changed the name. But yeah, it was called the Crossroads, the brewery. Those guys found us, a guy called Chris and another guy called Jim Kellett. Jim was like the main boss of the Crossroads, and Chris was a friend. I think he did more the PR stuff and like all the entertainment stuff, and we tried to put that together. Anyway, we performed at Beer Fest Asia in Singapore, which was a really cool show to play at. And we did a killer, to me, it was a killer show. It was a lot of fun. I don't like saying that. Like, you know, when you say, oh, my band was killer, it sounds so arrogant, but really it was a fun show. And it was a cool backdrop. You had Marina Bay Sands in the back, so it just looked sick. And then Chris saw us at that show, and he had actually messaged us, which I love this. I wish more people that are looking for bands, like A&R guys or anyone who puts on events, I wish that's what I'd like to be in the future. If I wasn't doing music, I think I'd like to be a talent. What's the word? Like someone who finds talent. And I respect them like that. So he reached out to us. I thought it was the coolest thing. It felt like rock star for us because, I mean, with the professionals, we had some cool opportunities. We would sign autographs. It felt cool. I don't know. I remember finding one of those autograph things we signed in the bin at the same show with the professionals. So I was like, I mean, you went from this to poof. So with this, it was pretty cool too, because he got us our own custom shirts, and it had the X from Crossroads, and it had Dirty Perfect. And it just looked cool. It was like it was sponsored by a beer brand. It was really cool for that feeling of it. And that's where we're like, oh, this guy's cool. We want to get to know him. And he invited us to come play at the opening of the Crossroads when they first the grand opened. They wanted us to headline, which is a beautiful feeling. We mixed it up with covers. We did some original stuff. You know, Tiga's really good at the rap stuff. You know, we do some really cool songs with him. And so we did that. And then I've lost my train of thought. That does happen a lot. What were we talking about again?
Yeah.
No, this so, happened really, really. I had an answer too. I just forgot what we were talking about. I literally will go, we'll just like, it'll cut my mind will just cut the thought in my brain. What we were talking about again? Crossroads, the brewery. Yes, we met the brewery. That was actually, I was so excited that you were coming. And I was also so upset when you came, not because you, us. What I found out later was the show that you heard wasn't the show we were doing. The sound man hadn't figured out something and he screwed something up. And instead of going, hey guys, can you wait 10 more minutes before we start? He just said, oh, fuck it, let him play. And what had happened was, I'm sorry if I swore on your podcast and you don't allow that. I know some people don't like swearing on here. He just let us play, which is really annoying. I don't like that. Like we did a sound check, everything sounded epic. And then on the show time, on stage, I heard this, my guitar sound sounded clean. And it sounded distorted, not like overdrive clean, where it's like slightly overdriven. It was literally a clean channel and the amp. And he, whatever happened, he got his wires crossed and it was bad, man. So the show, when I do tell me that's doom, bam, 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 it was like bam, 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 bam. And I'm like, what the hell is that? And I remember coming out to you in the audience where I had the wireless. And I was coming to say hi, but I was also like, what is that? And we sounded terrible to me because the rock element wasn't there. We didn't have but we performed, like I said earlier, what we talked about. I'll just keep performing through it. I'll perform as if it's the world's greatest show ever. And I'll keep headbanging. I hate it. I hate it so much what's happening right now. I hate the sound, everything. But I said, you know, people came. You came. We have to do a show. And you said some really lovely things. But I think the next time we see you, we need to rock it twice as hard to make up for that sound of that show because the sound was bad. But either way, you know, it was awesome that you were able to come to that show. And I hope I wish to rock out for you properly again, the real way. We'll come to Philippines, rock there. Can you hear me okay? The internet cut out just now. Okay.
Yeah. It's okay. It's okay. I can hear you. So Luke, I really love your song, Tell Me by Dirty Perfect.
Yes, bro.
You have an official music video, right?
Yeah.
But there is a video that you posted a rehearsal from a studio, which is I really love that video more than the official music video.
Yeah, I do too, because it wasn't actually rehearsal, it was a sound check for a show. And we were ironically opening for a bigger band from the Canada. We was doing a secret show in Singapore, and that we weren't really opening. We were kind of one of the bands that played. And this band had, instead of opening, they wanted us to be the band that they wanted us to play on the same night as them. And I was like, sweet, let's do it. So it was like a special show for Dirty Perfect. It was one of our first real shows together, apart from the live shows, where we first really started calling ourselves Dirty Perfect. Yeah, that was at the Music Palace of Singapore. And this place was really cool. It was like Secret Sounds or Tiny Desk Concert sort of vibe, where it was a very small venue. It could fit maybe 20, 30 people, depending on how fat people are and how small they are. And they said, we want to record the show. And I'm like, okay, cool. And they said, but you got a lot of people coming. So, and I'm like, by a lot, you mean 20 or 30. So that's not a lot. For this place, it's a lot. And they were like, yeah, yeah. So can we record it like a pre-recording? Can we do the recording of your sound check, but pretend you're performing in front of the audience? And some people came early to the show. So it was nice to have a little audience, and I rocked it. But if you watch the video, I probably potentially almost broke my ankle 5 or 6 times because my boots were stuck and wedged between my pedal board and the drum riser. There was like, I was like this. And my head, I had to like break every muscle in my neck to make my hair fly up like I usually do. And it wouldn't do it. I was getting really frustrated. And I was tripping over wires. I was like, oh my God, where am I going? I'm going down. Here we go. And Teague was the same. He was like trying, he had more space because he likes more space. But the problem was, I wanted to please him every time he says, man, I need more space. I give him that. But then I realized, oh my God, I now have no space. I have this tiny little triangle where I have to somehow still rock, and there's now cameras on me. I got to perform from here to here just because the camera's on. So we did that, and it was fun. It was really cool because the video came out really cool. But then my string, I literally had just restrung my guitar, by the way, literally. And less than an hour before the show, I was so, I'm like, you know what? This guitar is going to do it for me. And thank God for that video. If we hadn't to plan to do that instead of after the show or during the show probably wouldn't have happened because the string snapped. If you see in the song, in that Tommy music video, the live one, my G string snaps. Go to the solo, the string goes, pow! I'm like, oh my, are you kidding? And I had to like, when that string goes, my main soloing thing, especially when I have the delay, I literally went, abort mission, man overboard, to myself in my brain. And I literally jumped on my pedal. I'm like, I pressed every effect just so it would get me out of it. So ironically, that recording from that show was what I actually wanted on the actual song, but I couldn't recreate it because I had no idea what I was doing. I was like fighting for my life in that solo. So I was like, all those sounds was just random crap that ended up sounding okay. And because it was funny, I'm like doing this to the guitar, I'm like braiding my hair on the guitar sort of style. It just, and then I would just hit the crap out of every note I could. And if it sounded good, I'm like, all right, we got through that. And thank God the string snapped. Because if it had happened during the show, we don't stop. We don't stop to talk. We were like, oh yeah, hey, thanks a lot, guys. I try not to talk because I talk a lot, as you may have realized. And I wanted to just keep performing and playing music. So luckily that happened. And it was a really cool video. It turned out really cool. And I agree. I love the music video we did as well. And I'm very thankful to the people who did it. But I've always loved live music videos. And that's what I wanted for the Tell Me music video. Unfortunately, we had some other videographer friends that had filmed us in the past and some other companies that had filmed us and they didn't want to get, even though we paid for it, they didn't want to give us the footage from all the shows we've done because they didn't want to share with the person who was making this video with us. And I was like, that's really dumb. We paid you for it. And right. They refused to give us the information. So it sucked because the video was good, but there was not enough shots. And things went wrong. I hired a damn smoke machine. We got ripped off. The smoke machine went poof. I'm like, oh, you're charging me $200 for that damn machine. Goes, that's all the smoke that came out of it. It didn't work. I'm like, are you serious? And then they said, oh, sorry, here, send you a bad one. Here, send it back and we'll send you another one. So they sent that to the set and that one went poof, poof. I'm like, what the hell? You just wasted like 3 hours of our studio time. What the heck? And then they were, it didn't matter. But we didn't have a lot of footage to work with. So we just had to keep, I said, you know what? Screw it. Let's do the video. So it's just lots of, it's like an epilepsy fit. When you watch it, if you know, there's people that go like, when they watch like shuddery stuff, right. They go like, oh, It'll give you an epileptic fit. So if you want an epileptic fit, watch Tell Me on YouTube. Try it with drugs. Maybe it'll slow down. Don't do drugs. No, don't do that. Don't do that. I shouldn't have said that. I'm on Singapore right now. I just said it doesn't matter. I don't do drugs. I don't like them. I am the drug, I think.
Right. One thing I miss, you know, during this pandemic is like, you know, going to Singapore, going to all the shows, because most of the shows that I go to, I will see you there. And, you know, the there are a bunch of regular people who are always there, right? Like,
yeah,
I will
yeah.
see you. I will see Afik,
yep,
Sabrina, yep. and all this. So,
and Matt, and he calls himself Man Magnetic on Facebook. Like, I see him on everything. I know that's not like he's one. He has a really. I love that he goes by that alias. And Ross Knudsen and Loretta right. Alabons and stuff. I love those guys. And you, if you were here, man, you would love the Flying V. Like, that's Ross's new place. Like, Ross, as people may not know, Ross and Loretta Knudsen, they own LAMC Productions. And they were the ones that brought Guns N' Roses, and they did Metallica, right. It's awesome. And then they've got a rock band in Singapore that I go and visit once in a while, which is really cool, called The Flying V. And they have all the memorabilia from all the shows they've done the last 20 odd years or something. But yeah, man, every time I'd see you, I would always think of you as like, where's Wally? Like, you'd know the beard. Or if you didn't have the beard, there was a look about you. You would come decked out in this outfit. And I was thinking about this today. I thought, like, if you brought it up, I was like, as far as I can remember, every show that I've been to, I've seen you there. And if I'm not there, I go on Facebook and I see you in pictures. Like, every goddamn show, you are featured everywhere. Like, you're like the president of music. You're present and you're the present. And like, you're everywhere. Like, I honestly, you should see in Asia or Singapore or whatever, if there's a Guinness Book of Records for how many shows someone can go to in a year, including live streams. I know you posted that recently. I saw that. I was like, damn, dude. I was like, how did he get to go watch that band? Like, I think it was Guns N' Roses. I'm like, how did he watch them during the live? And then I saw the live stream. And I'm like, ah, right. But still.
Yeah.
Dude, so, I mean, look at you on the back there. You've got this massive. I literally, all of my stuff that I have some cool stuff. I've got like, when we went to the Scorpion concert and all that stuff, I've got an autograph of mine called Benny Lim, who runs a Singapore drum shop. And I've got all that stuff up there, but it's in a damn box, in a shoe box, because I'm scared it'll get ruined or something. But I honestly, now I'm looking at my background, I literally just set that up today. Like, I put the amps, I'm like, oh, it's going to look so cool. I'm going to put the guitars, it'll look so nice. And then I'm sitting here, I'm like, you see nothing. All that work for nothing. And I was going to hang like the stuff like what you're doing, and you made it look something. You got Slash up there, Megadeth. Dude, your room looks like you are the podcast right there.
Yeah, you know, Luke, I every year from 2017, 2018, 2019, I think I went to more than 60 gigs every year.
Yeah, that was, I did the same. I went to almost most of the, yeah, for a couple of years, I was going to like 100, 150, sometimes two more. No, definitely more. Maybe 300 shows in a year. Some of them I would perform at, but a lot of them I went to.
Right.
I would just show my face and meet people, famous people. I've been really lucky. And that's why I love telling stories, because it's weird how many people and celebrities I have actually met and worked with or opened for. It's weird. And the names that come up, people are like, what? You met Steven Tyler? Like, huh? You hung out with Katy Perry? You opened for a Spice Girl? You met Matt Bellamy from, it was weird. And a lot of the time they thought I was someone, and I just went with it. I just pretended I was the person they thought I was. Cause I looked, right. When you look like this, someone always thinks you're someone. Whether I'm the fat guy from Lost, I'm like, okay, I'm that fat guy from Lost. Okay, I'm Jack Black. Yeah, sure. People do. I mean, they're so drunk, they just go with it. I'm like, yeah, cool. So I've been really lucky. That's what I love seeing, because people are coming in and out all the time. It's awesome. We went to Opeth, and someone thought I was like, you were at the Opeth show, right?
Yes, I was there.
Yeah, so I was at the soundboard. I was so lucky because somebody in the crew thought I was like the lead singer at one point, because I didn't realize he had a beard and he had the long hair. And I was like, and I wore my hat that day, and he right. was wearing exactly what I was wearing, but he was on stage. So the person who let me into the sound booth to watch the best show ever didn't realize that the lead singer was on stage the whole time. And said, I didn't know. I was like, and he let me through down that at a lot of shows. I've just gone, I just look up what the artists wear sometimes. I don't know who the bands are. I just dress up like them, rock up to the event. I don't really care about the show half the time. I do, but I like the atmosphere. And I'll just rock up and pretend I'm someone for the night. And then if I meet some cool people, oh, cool. Sounds good to me.
Yeah, one of the fun photo was you watch Paramore with the guy from Linkin Park.
Mike Shinoda, yeah.
Yeah.
That was weird as, dude. I honestly, I wish I would have posted more pictures so you'd have more stuff to talk about like that, because I've got so many pictures that I have not posted. I think because I feel it's, if I show them off too much and tell this, because there are true stories, but people get very jealous of that true stories, right? So if I say, oh, you know, I met Matt Bellamy and I had we had a really nice chat, and the Sky Blue, the one of the guys from LMFAO, you know, I opened for him and jammed with him a bit at the F1. All these guys, I met so many cool artists, including Mike Shinoda. And ironically, a year later, I performed at the F1 again because I got called back for about 5 years. It was a really, really cool opportunity. And the keyboard player, the DJ from, I can't remember his name, but the DJ from Linkin Park was there. And I was like, oh, cool, another one. It's like Monopoly. Let's go. Let's buy some of this land. So, it's so random. I just run into people all the time. It's so weird. Like, weird, man. And, yeah, we just hit it off. It was weird. So, yeah, the Mike Shinoda thing. I was like, and I'm very good at just like you, I think. I'm very good at faces. I'm terrible at names most of the time. But I saw his face at the show. I was like, am I standing next to Mike Shinoda? And my friend's like, who's that? And I was like, the Linkin Park guy, the guy that raps, you know, the one that's like, one thing, don't man, no. That one, not the, not that one. They went, you don't know any lyrics they're saying half the time, but it sounds sick and I want to be them. And my friend was like, oh yeah, that's him. She's talked to him. I said, I don't know how to, because I don't know. I get really weirdly starstruck. It doesn't matter who you are. You could be the most hated celebrity in the world or famous for nothing. And I would still, and you had no, you, it's weird. And so I didn't know what to say to him. I was like, hey, you're that guy from Linkin Park, huh? Isn't that sound great? It was weird, but he was really nice. What was really cool was I went and checked with a friend. Ironically, a friend of mine he found Linkin Park. When I say that, I mean, he didn't put them together. He was the one that kind of helped them. I don't want to give too much information that might not be true, but from what I've heard from him, his name is Rob McDermott. And I sent him a message that night. I said, hey, man, he was like their tour manager for about 10 years. And he would come to Singapore for Music Matters and do talks. And when I got to meet Rob, I heard about him years ago. Every time he'd come to Singapore, we'd party up like crazy. It was a lot of fun. And I confirmed, I said, hey, is this Mike? And he was like, oh yeah, it's Mike Shinoda. He said, tell him this story and he will talk to you. And I was like, I feel like I'm talking to a genie right now. So I literally said, hey, Mike, I all of a sudden got really confident because I put on a character, right? I was like, hey, Mike, what's up, man? I know Rob McDermott. I was just acting like really cool. I was like, oh, I know Rob McDermott. You know, like your tour manager from way back. And he goes, oh, yeah, bro, you're cool. Yeah, yeah. He doesn't sound like that. I make him sound like Keanu Reeves. Right. And he's like, oh, yeah. And I was like, I said, oh, I remember that time. I just took the story as if it was my story. It wasn't. I was like, oh, I remember that time, like when you and Rob were in whatever country and you did this. And he remembered. And that's when he started. And then I cooled down the stupid talk. And we had a real conversation. He was honestly so nice. I thought that he would be a bit like uptight. So he was playing with Fort Minor the next day. You know his other group that he has? Do you know Fort Minor?
Yeah.
Yeah. So he had his band. I didn't know this. And he was just coming to watch the show. And I again, when I see artists like that I look up to so much that you never see them. You don't see them in the magazines. You don't see them in tabloids. They do a few interviews, but they're not. They're famous as hell, but you never see them in anything apart from live shows. And to see him at a show and go like, that inspires me. Like, I just want to be able to do my shows and then go see hundreds of other shows all the time and not feel pressured that I should stay home and I should do this and do that. Like when people go like, I'm not famous. I don't consider myself famous. I'm known for what I do in my small circle of what I do. And then everyone else has their own circles and sometimes they make love. I appreciated that because I was like, I love hanging out with anybody. And just hanging out, having a drink, you know, chilling out, having a drink with friends. And then we meet new people. And then they go on Instagram. I didn't have that many followers, but my Instagram is a bit crazy at times because of the pictures, the videos. I post like some of the cool places we play at. And people go like, wow, how come you don't have many? You have like 3,500 followers or some crap, but then you have these crazy videos. Why don't you push that? But I'm like, I might put it out. I'm going to go back to my life. This is not my life. This is my life, you know? So I want to enjoy that. But I just loved it. I liked that he was so down to earth. And Matt Bellamy was the same. I've met some celebrities who are not, and I'm sure you have too. And you're like, wow, I really wish I did. I'm thinking to myself, wow, I really wish I didn't meet that person. And some of them I'm like, wow, I'm like Katy Perry. When I met her, dude, it was weird. It was awesome and weird. Because she's on such a high pedestal. And right. She bought me a beer. She goes, can I buy you a drink? And I'm like, what the heck? Like, my friends look at me like, do you know her? I'm like, apparently. and literally we started talking about Tasmania, where I'm from. And that's where the conversation started. She was dating John Mayer at the time. And she was doing, it was a Sunday night. I was out with some Filipino friends that were from bands in the city. You might know them from Clark Key. We were out to party. I was going home. And I said, I swear to God, I just saw Katy Perry. I went on Twitter, which I never do. I never go on Twitter. And I thought, I'm just going to like mess with people and say, hey guys, swear to God, I just saw Katy Perry entourage walking down Clark Key. Ha, maybe I'm lying. Maybe I'm being truthful. Who knows? Bye. And I left and I went and got in the cab. And my friend called me and they were like, the Filipino guys, they're like, hey, you're a liar. I bet that the Katy Perry is not really here. You're lying to us. That's my Filipino accent. It's terrible. I'm sorry. I'm sorry to all Filipino people. I love you. But yes. And he was like, and then like 2 minutes later, they called me again. I had my one foot in the car and about to close the door. And he goes, oh my God, it's Katy Perry. She's really here. She's in the bar. She's, oh my God, she's here. You weren't lying because you lie all the time. And I came back and they were right. And she was right in the front. And then I was outside. I tried to get a better look and her bodyguard smacked me in the face. I was so mad. I can't fight for shit. But in my head, we go back to my origins of WWE and WCW. I was like, tree trunk match, come alive. Here he comes. Come and get you with my tree trunks. And I went outside. I was really upset. I was slamming. I was kicking shit. I was so upset that he hit me. Because I was trying to look at her. I was like, oh, I was doing that thing. And then he knew that I was trying to do that. And he hit me. And I pretended I was going to the bar. And she came out. She tapped me on the shoulder. Didn't take shit from anyone. There was all these suck-ups going like, oh, Katy Perry, my wife loves you. I don't really like your music, but could I get a picture to show off to my wife? And she was like, she was smoking. She was like, didn't give a shit. Did not. I was like, wow. I'm actually quite surprised to see her like that. I'm like, I was still upset. And I was, like, imagine this from behind. I'm like, all you see is this. I'm like, in my head, I'm imagining I'm going to get a chair. I'm going to smack him. And I'm going to get like my lighter and like burn his nostril hair or something, or just do something to hurt him. Like he hurt me. And as I was doing that, my friends are here like, dude, what is wrong with you? And I feel this tap on my shoulder and I went to go, bam, because I was just angry. And she goes, hi, I'm Katie. I'm like, what? And she's like, what's your name? I'm like, what is going on? And then my first boyfriend, I'm like, what is going on right now? She then invites me in for a beer and I'm like, and the same bodyguard that hit me said, oh, she goes, whatever his name, let's just call him douchebag. No, Grant, we'll call him that. And she was like, hey, Grant, Luke, can you get my new Singapore friend, Luke Bursky? She said my name. I'm like, And she's like, can you get me and my new friend, Luke Bursky, a drink? What would you like, Luke? And I'm like, what? This is weird. It was so weird. And then she bought me beers all night and we partied all night till 4 a.m. And then she invited me to the show the next day and gave me tickets. And these were like $500 tickets. And I brought my mom, my sister. They were flying to Singapore the next day. And the girl that I actually liked at the time, but now she's going to know shit. Hopefully she doesn't listen to this. No, I don't want her to listen to this. That's the one girl that can't listen to this. And now she knows. But and so she came and she was all dressed up and we had a good time. And yeah. And then I sent a message, hey, good luck for the show tonight. They said, oh, Katie just got in. It was like 7 p.m. She had to go on at 8 p.m. She was wasted from the night before. And I never heard from her again. Sad, really. But it's just a cool experience. It was not because we had a cool conversation. We talked about music. We talked about inspiring stories and whatever. And I just loved her story. And I watched her movies, ironically, and told her that. And she goes, wow, I don't think anyone's watched that. So it was kind of cool. I gave her some, you know, praising as well, because I'm a rock guy. And she came the whole poppy thing. She was in like kind of Alanis Morissette sort of vibe. Anyway, we're not talking about her, so let's continue. Right. Sorry. I went completely off topic as usual. I apologize.
That's so exciting story. Luke, so what's your message to the viewers of the podcast and also people who support you, listen to you, go to your shows?
First of all, keep listening to Chana, Chana, Chana. That's Chana 3X, by the way, for those who have Tourette syndrome. Chana. I just realized that sounds like China. China, China, China. You should get like Donald Trump. It sounds like Donald Trump going China, China, China. If he ever introduced you, I'm going off topic already. Luke, stop it. Okay, sorry. So first of all, keep listening to this podcast because it's awesome and I love everything. Like, you do your research, man. That's what I love about people who do interviews. You actually do your research. And I'm so sorry I didn't send you this stuff along like I was going to. You went and did it, man. You chose a cool picture. I'm like, whoa, this guy got some cool stuff. And you asked me questions I didn't even know about. So first of all, keep doing that. And to everyone else in the world, whether you're doing music or you're doing anything, I guarantee you, you won't have this time again. I'm not saying I'm the happiest guy in the world. I'm not saying I'm financially stable. I'm not. None of us are. But focus. If you love something right now, go and do that. Don't. It's great to try something new. Have fun with it. It could be music. It could be sports. It could be anything. Because you're never going to get this time again. Like, I have always loved working with kids. I never thought I'd actually enjoy it, like for more than a day, like most parents. But I'm not a parent, but I mean, the fact that I've now, wow, I could go and apply this skill to anything in a band. It could be anything. So I've now taken one skill and turned it into 10 new skills. That's what gets me up in the morning, gets me excited each day is like, well, today I'm going to go out and make a difference. In the past, if you'd have asked me to do kids camp 2 years ago, I would have said, no, I'm not going to swear, but go screw yourself. Like, no way. I couldn't stand that job. I'm a rock star. How dare you ask me such a silly question? But I say to those that are listening and are lacking inspiration right now, go out there and try something new. If you want to learn guitar, hit me up. But not all guitar. I can't do like crazy shit, but you know, some guitar stuff. Pick up an instrument, have some fun with it. If you are doing music and you've had to call it quits for the while because of COVID and the corona apocalypse and all the nonsense that goes with it, it's okay. Like, I pretty much took a break from music for 18 months and not everyone was happy, but I was. I wasn't happy. And I had to unhappy do that for myself. If I didn't do that, I probably wouldn't. Dirty Perfect may have just broken up. And not because we want to, but because I was not enjoying. I literally, Shana, I was hating music. Like, end of 2019. I said this earlier, and people don't really understand this to the extent. It was depressing. I was so depressed. Anything to do with music, I didn't want to perform anymore. I hated the live streams. Not the people doing it, I just hated it. So I get it when people have had to change their jobs and change their mentalities, and it's broken up relationships with friends and family and whatever. And people are depressed. People are like really sad and they feel lost right now. It gets better. I am living proof of it. I'm still young. We're all still young. And no matter what age you are, if you want to pick up music, you want to do something cool with your life, you can do it. Stop saying, I can't do this, I can't do that, because I was a canter. That sounds like another word right now. I shouldn't. Canter sounds so bad. I was you know what I'm talking about. I'm not going to say what it was. Whoever's listening is Australian would know what I'm talking about. But for me, one of the coolest things that changed my whole mindset, like, I love the movie Yes Man with Jim Carrey. I love Jim Carrey and I love Robin Williams and I'm a comedian as well. I'm very silly and funny. I'm probably not that funny to most, but I try. And for me, something really cool, a friend of a family friend sort of thing, had their son go on this show called The Voice in Australia. And he was all right, but he wasn't ready for that show. He was very young. He was like 15 or 16. And he was really upset. He screwed up. He didn't perform his best because he had no experience. But he could perform. He could write. So he got up and he performed. And this is just a quick story. I'll try to keep it as short as I can. And no one turned on the chairs. And it was something that one of the guests, that one of the judges said. And the judge was Delta Goodrum. I think the show, you definitely got it, but you got to come back and go out there and experience the world. I used to hate people telling me, you can't do this, you can't do that, you don't have enough experience, you're too young, you can't do that. I hated it, but I made it. What she said honestly has changed my whole thinking of the word no. She said, just remember, mate, she goes, how do you think you did? And he goes, oh, I think it was shit. And I was like, that's a weird thing to say on live TV, but okay. But he's young. She goes, just remember, this is not, don't think of no as no. Think of no as new opportunity. And I was like, holy shit, I've never in my life heard that. And then years later, I got into Gary Vee and all these other guys. So there is always grass that I'm going to say that wrong. The grass is always greener on the other side. It does get better. Right now, my happy words may not be the words you want to hear. And I apologize if I've killed your buzz, but it does get better when you least expect it. It took me about 18 months to get there, maybe more. I think it's been, yes, definitely more, maybe 2 years. And I'm finally, I feel like I'm at day one again, learning music for the first time with all this skill behind me and experience and excitement for what comes next. So whatever project I take on from now on, I have to love it. I have to want it. I'm not going to just take on a gig just because. Take it on because I want to do that gig, and it doesn't remind me of 1,000 nights of the same music. I'm going to go and build and grow and get better. So if right now you're struggling and you're having a hard time, reach out to friends, reach out to anyone. You can even call my man Chana. You can reach anyone, ask anyone you look to, people will be there for you. And these are tough times, but it will get better. I've probably said the word better 1,000.
Yeah,
it was a lot. I do apologize. You probably have to come and listen to this podcast, everybody, like 56 times to catch everything I just said, and you can just like soundbite that. That's cool. And more views.
So, Luke, anybody you want to shout out to?
Well, first of all, you, Chana, the best. Shout out to Teague Bass. My family back home, my mom, my brothers, my sister, all my friends. I'm pretty much, I feel like I should have an award right now. I'll just drop my water bottle. I'd just like to thank you all so much for tuning in. I'm literally holding a water bottle like this, the Academy Awards. And it smells like something I shouldn't be drinking. It's not durian water, I swear. But yes, I just everyone who's listened, anyone who's listening right now, thank you for tuning in. I apologize. This has probably been the longest podcast you'll ever hear. Thank you just to everyone who listens to my music and continues to follow me and continues to send me beautiful messages to check how I'm doing, or like they love the song or they like the feeling. Like it's a nice feeling to be reminded. Like music stays on forever, but it's always nice when you... I haven't heard anyone talk about, for me personally, tell me for a while, like the way you did, how it made you feel and everything. It's nice to hear that stuff. Say what you feel and mean what you say. It's cool. So yeah, I just shout out to everyone. I think everyone needs a shout out. So if you're listening right now, this is a shout out to you. Right. Let's split it up with everyone.
So Luke, I really enjoy talking to you, and this conversation was great. And I mean, we should have done this earlier, but I think we did it at the right time, right? Like it happened. So I'm looking forward to more, you know, new music from Dirty Perfect and you, and hopefully I can see you again in Singapore soon. So stay safe and stay heavy.
Thanks, brother. You stay safe and heavy too, bro. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Luke. Have a great evening.
No problem, brother.